All right, our last guest this week, certainly not least, is Mep Faber, CEO and Chief Investment Officer at Cambria, who now has 12 ETFs with about $750 million invested, including the brand new Cambria Cannabis ETF, which to me, this has the best ticker symbol of all the pot ETFs, TOKE, T-O-K-E. That's going to be tough to beat. Mep, congratulations on the ETF. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Mep, so you filed for this ETF all the way back in, I believe, May of 2017. Can you give us a sense as to what the process has been like just getting this ETF to market?
Oh, long and windy. But, you know, the case when, as is always, when you have a lot of regulators and different people involved, many of these things take quite a bit of time. You know, like you mentioned, this isn't our first rodeo on getting funds out, some of which are very complex and have derivatives and some that short and long, you know, so it's, we've been through kind of the ringer. You know, this fund is a bit unique, or this space is a bit unique because the challenge was less from, say, the regulators or SEC or legal as much, or admin, but it was actually, you know, the challenges was rather on the banking side with the cannabis sort of landscape. So it was more of a custodian-driven reluctance, which in many ways I get it. It makes a lot of sense, but glad to finally make it to the starting line.
All right, so take us through the ETF. This is actively managed. How are you approaching the cannabis space, and perhaps give us a flavor for your management style here?
Sure. If you take a quick step back, you know, we're a quant shop, and, you know, most of our funds are kind of rooted in academic literature or rooted in quantitative rules-based ideas. And most of the thematic ideas, and we say thematics, it means everything from sectors. So if you think about the U.S. stock market broken up into the 11 sectors, such as real estate or healthcare, those are really themes. You could also apply themes to geographies like emerging Africa, or even sort of value-driven, like there's the ESG world or Catholic values. And you can say some of those themes make a lot of sense. Some of them are a little more head-scratchers, but it allows you to get a basket of a certain approach. And we've actually been one of the people that said, you know, thematic investing doesn't really add to your long-term risk-adjusted return. So what are we doing launching a cannabis fund? Well, there are a couple areas where thematic investing we think makes a lot of sense. You can apply sort of a factor approach, and listeners will resonate with the old school factor approach to say value or momentum, like a sector rotation amongst themes. That's a very common approach. Another one would be mean reversion when a theme is really out of favor. So if you look at, say, coal stocks or uranium stocks after they were down 60, 80, 90% or down 5 years in a row. And lastly is a theme where there's actually like a structural or behavioral reason why outperformance may happen. And this is kind of rare, and you have to kind of think through this, but one, I think there's a couple good examples. We think cannabis fits this theme. You know, if you go back to, way back to the 1930s, we weren't around, but probably our grandparents were, and you had a similar situation arising in the U.S. where you had a market that was already well-established but illegal, moving towards legality. That, of course, is the alcohol industry, which today is over a $1.5 trillion industry globally. But in the U.S., you know, prohibition was going on, and prohibition was lifted. And we did some studies looking at how stocks responded post-prohibition ending, and, you know, found that there was some pretty strong returns in this case. There's some beer companies, for example, that double the returns of the stock market every year on average. I think U.S. stocks had done about 8%, and U.S. stocks did about 12%, and the beer stocks did about 20% in the decade after prohibition. And so as you walk forward that theme and idea to the present day, you have a similar situation around the world where the views and cultural acceptance of cannabis, what most people used to call marijuana or any other of the 100 names, have really moved from sort of disapproval to, I wouldn't say universal approval, but it's become, you know, in various stages of legality across the United States and around the world, seems to be increasing every day. And so it's an idea where it's pretty rare to have a already built-in sector base of users in demand and black market that's moving from, you know, black market to the legal market. So that was an idea that we had a few years ago and finally able to express today.
So, Meb, I want to talk a little bit more about thematic investing because, as you were alluding to, something that struck me as I looked at all of the different cannabis ETF issuers, we now have five pot ETFs on the market. All of the other issuers have previously dabbled in, if not entirely hung their hat on thematic ETFs. But of course, this is the first thematic ETF offered by Cambria. So was it this thought of perhaps a structural change, your third point on thematic investing, that tipped you over the edge in getting involved here?
Yeah, and so, you know, again, we had kind of stated earlier there's no real edge. Because if you think about it, most thematic funds are, and this is across the universe, if you look at S&P's, all their sector funds, you know, they simply say, okay, what are the 10, 20, 50, 100 stocks in that sector? We'll market cap weight them and done. And that's an old school buy and hold indexing approach. And in reality, there's not a whole lot of value to that, just like there's not a whole lot of value to doing market cap weighted S&P 500 fund, which is why it's become a commodity and people charge 5 basis points for it, or less, I think less today. And so it's the same thing with a lot of sectors and thematics. There's usually not as much pricing pressure because the Vanguards and BlackRocks of the world may or may not be wading into one of the thematic spaces. And so, you know, we said, look, we thought this was an opportunity. At the same time, I think it's an area that you can't market cap weight. I mean, you can. I just think it's suboptimal. Market cap weighting, obviously, is investing the most in the biggest. And when you have a fairly small universe, you know, you still need to be mindful of valuation. A lot of these companies are pre-earning, some even pre-revenue. And so you get a lot of speculation. And I think, you know, having an active approach or at least being thoughtful about, you know, constructing a portfolio is important. And, you know, at the same time, going along with what I said earlier, you know, we're certainly today the lowest cost offering in the space. You know, that may change at some point in the future, but quite a bit cheaper on the thematic side. So, you know, we've had other thematic ideas that we've just never fully launched for various reasons. And because, you know, again, the big key to us launching funds, and the reason we only have, you know, in the low teens versus 50 or 100 is the funds have to be something I want to put my own money into. And that goes back to this old belief and understanding that most mutual fund managers don't put any money in their own funds. So to me, anyway, it's important to design a product I actually want, not just as something that we can sell.
Meb, this is Jason. Like, new investors to the space, when they hear marijuana ETF or cannabis, you know, I think a lot of them think, well, who's growing marijuana? And that's where the opportunity is. But there must be a long journey between the farmer putting a seed into the dirt to the dispensary where I can get my CBD gummy. And if, you know, in between, where are the opportunities from one end of the spectrum to the other that this ETF considers?
Yeah, well, there's a lot. You know, you just reminded me back growing up, we have some farmland in Kansas. My dad grew up on a farm in a tiny town in Nebraska. And I remember driving around as a child and him pointing out a marijuana plant to me as a child. He said it just grows wild here, which I don't know if it's true in retrospect. He may have just been saying our local neighbor was growing it and nobody cared, or maybe they didn't say anything, but he said it grows wild, which it seems odd, a head-scratcher in retrospect. So it's funny. Look, you know, it's got a long history. Again, the kind of interesting thing about this sector is, you know, it's a plant that's been around for hundreds of years that's been used for a gazillion different things. You know, the concept of hemp and all sorts of textiles, but of course the medicinal, recreational side on all things marijuana. You know, you're applying the modern science to it. So, I mean, how many people I imagine are listening to this that are, you know, my aunts, uncles, cousins, friends that have never used marijuana in their life in any form that are now using a CBD lotion on their hands. I'm not convinced it even works, but, you know, hey, the placebo effect could be strong. I don't know. I'm not, who am I to say? But there's a million different iterations. You'll see the maturation of the industry where the science is applied, and I think a lot of the subjective effects will eventually be teased out. So it's much more, I think, dosable, where people can tease out instead of it just being, you know, certain guesswork. It becomes a pure science. And that's what happens when, you know, the big money comes in, when Coors or Budweiser or Altria or any of these massive firms come into the space, they can apply quite a bit of scientific rigor to the process. So there's a million different sort of tangential businesses. There's even some pharmaceutical sides. And so as you look at the landscape, you say, look, in the globally, depends who you believe, it's probably already well over $100 billion revenue business, but probably 90% of that is black market. As that matures in the U.S., we're at, 10, 20, 30 billion right now legal. But, that's a fraction of the black market. And so as it grows and takes over a bigger percentage of that, you'll even find new use cases that we're probably not even talking about today in 5, 10 years from now. And one of the biggest things is that the two continents with probably the heaviest usage and heaviest black market demand already are massive, will be at some point, massive growth areas, and that's being Asia and Africa, where there's just hardly any legal introduction yet. So it's a wide open field, and you'll see all sorts of things more than just the traditional, what people would expect to be just the flower and growing and smoking.
Meb, you're based in California, where obviously recreational marijuana is legal. And we have listeners all across the country, of course, many states where it's not legal. I believe rec marijuana is only legal in 11 states right now. But what have you seen, whether good or bad, with legalization that perhaps could be some takeaways or be relevant if marijuana is legalized at the federal level?
You know, it's funny because I grew up, I was born in Colorado and still have a lot of family there. And, there used to be this dog food plant where you would drive to the airport and it just stunk to high heaven going by downtown every day. If you drove on the highway, it just smelled so bad. And a couple years ago, I remember driving by and all of a sudden it smelled like kind of beautiful pine trees or something. I said, wow, the smell, why that smell? And then I said, oh, of course, it's because Colorado, it's the cannabis greenhouses that are all taking over a bunch of the industrial space. But, the funny thing to me was that in most ways, it's felt like a complete non-event. So, going back to my youth and the DARE campaign and Reefer Madness and everything else about how, a lot of these marijuana products would just cause everyone to go crazy and lose their minds. And you feel, when you see the legalization in certain places, and having been to many countries around the world where it's legalized to an extent or certainly decriminalized, it just felt like an enormous non-event. And in Colorado, where it's been legal for quite some time, the state already has more tax revenue from cannabis than they do alcohol. And so that's a pretty big number. And all of a sudden you start to see the politicians get in. They chase the money, right? And you see a lot of people in the government. I think every single Democratic political candidate is in favor of updating the laws and legalizing cannabis. So, and not only that, I'm on the incarceration side too. So there's a lot of political groundswell and support. But in many ways here in California, as in Colorado, it doesn't feel like it's a big deal. I think that I saw the first cannabis cafe in the U.S. is going to open in Hollywood this fall. So it just feels like it's something that, people, the mood has shifted for better or worse. And look, comparing it to, you can understand why, going back to certain structural and behavioral inefficiencies, the best performing industry asset class ever is likely tobacco. I mean, I grew up in a high school that's literally named after a tobacco company, R.J. Reynolds. This was in North Carolina, where, everyone smoked in high school. I didn't, but and look how many, millions upon millions of people, that's killed over the years. But that having been said, as a business, there's a structural reason why no one wants to own those stocks. And today, fast forward, you have an element of no one wanting to own them, but also an element of no one being able to own them. And so many of the companies that underlie the cannabis space, you can't own them even if you wanted to for various legal reasons. But, NASDAQ and NYSE won't list a lot of these companies. So you'll see that mature over the years, and certainly things will develop. But, so far in California and Colorado, to me, it's other than the smells wafting around certain neighborhoods and time of nights outside the bars, I don't think you notice a whole lot of difference.
Well, and we talked a little bit earlier, you mentioned a prohibition and when that ended. I think we're probably going to look back on this time the same way we do prohibition with alcohol, just in terms of the sentiment and view. Meb, a minute left. Just to reiterate, what do you view as the role of something like Toke in a portfolio?
Very minor, you know, despite being a fund manager, I'm sure most people would say, you just put all your money in this. Well, look, thematics are going to play a very, very, very small portion of your portfolio. I mean, the way I approach it in my head is say, look, I would buy one unit of this, whether a unit is 1% or 0.1%. And, you know, approach it the same way I would any other thematic. Hey, if it goes down 60%, maybe I'll add one more unit. You know what? And if it goes down 90%, I'll add one more. And I say that without joking whatsoever, because the very concentrated thematic funds can have huge volatility and huge upside, but they go through periods, they certainly can, where the stocks and the industries become in and out of favor for whether it's geopolitical or legislative reasons. We certainly obviously believe there's a lot of tailwinds, but valuation is not one of them right now. You know, a lot of these companies are certainly expensive and pre-revenue in many cases, and so I would like any investment. We say 10-year time horizon minimum, and would look to add some more if things go down.
Well, Meb, congratulations on the launch. I have to say, home run on the ticker symbol.
Thanks, guys.
Really appreciate you joining us.
Thanks so much.
That was Meb Faber, CEO and Chief Investment Officer at Cambria. Highly recommend following him on Twitter at Meb Faber. He also blogs and has a podcast at mebfaber.com. And then you can learn more about Toke by visiting cambriafunds.com.